From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today we learn about the legal concerns surrounding employer-mandated vaccinations. Then a local healthcare worker explains what getting the vaccine means to him.
Because of everything being cut back, personal issues, I really can't afford to be missing work too much. So the vaccine, if anything, kind of helps me keep safe while I'm at work.
Plus, we hear from a local bike shop owner about how a risk early in the pandemic led to a boom in business.
Anytime there's really troubled times in any country around the world, bicycles become absolutely essential. And when you start taking a look at something that affects the entire world, my gut feeling was that people are going to need bicycles, not just want bicycles.
Lake Effect is next, but first, the news. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. Today, we'll hear from a healthcare worker who received the COVID-19 vaccine. We'll hear from voters about what they're hoping from the Biden administration. And we'll hear from a bike shop owner about how business has been impacted by the pandemic. As the COVID-19 vaccine becomes more widely available, there are still a lot of unanswered questions about what it will really mean for our lives. Many of us are looking forward to returning to life as normal, but it's become clear that things won't be normal for quite some time. And even as we push forward with vaccinations, some people are hesitant about getting it and concerned that if they don't get it, they could face discrimination at work. Barbara Zabawa is a clinical assistant professor at UW-Milwaukee, and she joins me now to answer some of these questions. Barbara, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thanks for having me.
Can you be fired if you don't get the vaccine?
Well, possibly, yes. Before anyone gets terminated for refusing a vaccine, there would have to be some consult with legal counsel to ensure that there aren't any legal hurdles that haven't been considered before terminating someone. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is the federal agency that guides employers when it comes to the vaccine, for example, and potential discrimination claims, which is the primary legal concern when you terminate someone or discipline someone for refusing the vaccine. They have said that it's possible to exclude such individuals from the workplace, but they emphasize in their guidance that they issued in December of last year, so just a month ago, that termination would need to be considered quite seriously, all the different types of legal concerns when you decide to terminate someone. But excluding them from the workplace is definitely possible. And what that means or looks like is going to, you know, vary by workplace, but they certainly are trying to draw a balance between keeping other employees safe at work with making sure people are getting vaccinated or at least following other alternatives versus respecting people's individual rights and potential health concerns from the vaccine.
So let's unpack that a bit. You talked a bit, I believe, about exemptions. There are some people who can't get vaccines for a variety of reasons. What are some of these exemptions?
Yes, I think the two primary ones that you'll hear most about are either a disability-related exemption, so an underlying health condition or health concern that prohibits someone from wanting to get the vaccine or being able to get the vaccine. And the second type that I think you'll hear a lot are religious-based objections to the vaccine. And both of those objections, the disability-related and the religious-based objection, have protections under our civil rights laws. And so the disability-related ones are protected under the Americans with Disabilities Act and equivalent state laws. And then the religious ones are protected under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act and equivalent state-based laws protecting religious rights.
So if your religious rights or, you know, your rights as somebody who might have a disability but has something that disallows them from getting a vaccine, you can't be fired, right?
Right. Well, you can't be fired unless there is no other way to accommodate that individual, which is going to be, I think, hard for employers not to find a way to accommodate that individual, because the EEOC has said if someone refuses to take the vaccine because of an underlying disability or health condition, your first step under the law is to work with that person to find another way that they can continue doing their job and not impact the health of others. And there are a lot of options. You know, there's social distancing, there's working remotely, there's wearing masks or other protective equipment. So, you know, there are choices out there that could be adopted and agreed to by the employer and employee to help them not have to get the vaccine, but still keep other employees safe.
You mentioned they can be exempted from the workplace, which to me sounds like, while firing may be kind of the last resort, you can require that people entering your facilities get the vaccine.
Yes, you can make that a policy. Again, if there are people who have those objections that are legally protected, you know, that you have to be able to accommodate them so that they can still do their job. The law, you know, of course, recognizes that in some accommodations might pose an undue hardship, significant financial requirements for the employer to meet reasonable accommodations and make the job almost impossible to do if with those types of reasonable accommodations. Those would be undue hardship. And so after going through the iterative process with the employee to find a way to help that employee still be able to do their job but not have to take the vaccine if it was required by the employer, they can't find that alternative without causing undue hardship on the employer, then, you know, the next step might be to just exclude them from the workplace. You know, there's still family leave laws that might come into effect or other types of leave policies that might take effect at that point. But, you know, termination, I wouldn't say it's impossible, but it's there's a long road before you can get there.
You know, you mentioned that some of the exemptions are because of health reasons. There are people who can't get vaccines. I know one of the complications that is relatively common is an allergy to eggs. There are a variety of things that can cause you to have an adverse reaction to vaccines. That being said, the other exemption that you mentioned is religious. That gets into a kind of murkier area. You can prove pretty easily that you have an allergy. Do you have to prove that you are part of a religious group that doesn't believe in vaccines?
Well, the EEOC in its guidance that it issued last month said that employers would be wise to just assume that when someone raises a religious exception request, that it's a sincerely held religious belief. But as you point out, Joy, you know, religion can be very subjective, and there are religions out there that people have that are not in the mainstream, if you will, that are not familiar to everyone. And so, you know, the employer should take them at their word, but if they need additional evidence or explanation, they can ask for it from the employee. And there have been lawsuits in the past, you know, particularly in healthcare settings where mandatory flu vaccines, for example, is commonplace, where employees have raised religious objections on the flu vaccine mandate. And courts have been split as far as their willingness to side with the employee on the sincerity of their religious belief. In one case, there was an objection by an employee, and he claimed very loosely that it was tied to a religious belief. And the court in that case did not find that his belief was sincerely held. They closely examined the employee's statements about his religious beliefs and didn't find them to be credible, that it was a sincerely held, life-changing kind of religion for that case. There was another case, though, where an employee was a vegan and objected to the flu vaccine because of vegan beliefs, and there was substances in the vaccine that would have countered those vegan beliefs. And in that case, the employee prevailed, and the court sided with the employee, saying that veganism could be treated like a religious belief. So it really, when it comes to religious objections and the subjectivity of, you know, a lot of those objections, the courts, it's kind of a toss-up on what the court might do.
That's interesting, because vaccines are actually made out of the blood of horseshoe crabs. So it would seem that if you were a vegan, you might take issue with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was that one lawsuit that I mentioned. That's exactly was the facts in that case.
I don't believe they're killed in the process, I should say. They are harvested for a bit and then released back into the ocean, but it is their blood. Now, this gets to a big question that I think a lot of people who do plan to get the vaccine and return to work are really asking themselves. Can an employer reveal whether or not their employees have been vaccinated so they inform their other employees of their own personal risk?
Yeah, well, and the EEOC had released guidance when COVID testing, you know, was first coming on board, you know, less than a year ago, about whether if someone tested positive in the workplace, can employers reveal that information to employees who may have been in contact with that person? And the EEOC had guided employers that, you know, to the extent you don't have to reveal names, but just warn individuals who may have been in contact with that person that they could be at risk so they could get tested. That would be best, because what you're asking really lends itself again to the Americans with Disabilities Act, which requires employers to keep employee medical information confidential and separate from their regular employee records. And so revealing whether someone has received a vaccine, just as if they had tested positive, is medical information. And that information by law should be kept confidential. So employers shouldn't be revealing names. You know, that would be the guidance from the EEOC, is to reveal the information that's necessary to protect your workforce. And it's questionable whether revealing a name is necessary in a lot of circumstances. And the other piece that I don't think we talked about that makes this, the COVID vaccine, the mandating of the COVID vaccine, a bit more risky from a legal standpoint, is the fact that it's not been really fully vetted like a lot of vaccines in the past that were subject to lawsuits have been tested over years. You know, the science is absolutely clear about the benefits versus the risks. And, you know, we don't have the benefit of a long testing period. And so the FDA has authorized the use of the vaccine, the COVID vaccine, under emergency use authorization, because, you know, it hasn't had the same kind of years-long testing process that other vaccines have gone through.
All right. Well, Barbara, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Thank you so much for having me.
Barbara Zabawa is a clinical assistant professor and MHA program co-director at UW-Milwaukee. She's also the author of The Tug, Finding Purpose and Joy Through Entrepreneurship. If you missed Monday's show and you want to hear our conversation about at-home COVID-19 testing, you can find it at WUWM.com on the Lake Effect page. If you ever miss an episode or want to take us to go, you can download the Lake Effect podcast from Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or really wherever you get your podcasts. Wisconsin's rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine is among the slowest in the U.S. Governor Tony Evers has blamed the lagging numbers on low supply. and the disorganized federal rollout led by former President Trump. But as President Biden makes ambitious goals of giving 100 million shots in 100 days, it remains unclear how that may impact Wisconsinites' ability to get the vaccine. Right now, many of the Wisconsinites who've been vaccinated work in healthcare. We'll hear from one of them now.
My name is Mike Groom, and I am an emergency room RN. I got the Pfizer vaccine. So a couple weeks beforehand, we had gotten word that we were going to be getting the vaccine at my hospital. So we were all given an option to have early access to the vaccine to kind of have the first wave come through. They're trying to predict whether or not they were going to have any side effects with it. So they didn't want everyone to get vaccinated at once. So they kind of had it done in waves. So I filled up paperwork, wanted to kind of take care of it right away. I've been COVID negative as of thus far, so I don't want to push my luck any further. So I signed up and got my time slot and went in within the first week that we had it available. I went in and got my first vaccine. A couple weeks ago, I got my second one. Pretty straightforward, pretty well handled. I went up, got my vaccine, waited 15 minutes afterwards to see if there were any side effects. The first time around, within about 12 hours, I had a bit of a headache and a little bit of a sore throat that lasted for a couple of days. Noticeably, like my arm was a little bit more tender than the average flu shot or tetanus shot for about the first 24 hours. And then it was better after that. Now, a lot of my peers and coworkers had, after the second vaccine, said the symptoms were worse. So kind of fatigue, a little bit of fever and chills, headache were the big ones. I had a little bit of headache after the second vaccine, but it wasn't anything too bad. It was pretty mild. We got a little bit of information beforehand from a doctor that did their own independent research into the vaccine before I went up. And it was my kind of abridged understanding that, you know, you're still capable of catching it, but the symptoms would be manageable. You would still be a carrier. So as far as any sort of communication with, or just kind of going back to regular life kind of stuff, still keep the distance, still wear the mask. We're kind of waiting for the herd immunity before we can really start getting back into a regular lifestyle of things. At least this is my understanding of the report that was given to me. My life has been pretty closed off since COVID. You know, we're going through the routines and doing what we can to protect ourselves. So social distancing, wearing masks in public. I've elected to have my children not go in-person school. So we're trying to keep everything relatively contained here. I don't imagine the vaccine's going to do a whole lot to change my lifestyle until, you know, it's more widely available to everyone else. But as far as my workplace, this means quite a bit to me. Because of everything being cut back, personal issues, I really can't afford to be missing work too much. So the vaccine, if anything, kind of helps me keep safe while I'm at work. And that's where my decision ultimately came from as far as getting the vaccine as early as I did, was to make sure that I was still able to keep working. The pressures and the stresses that have been pushed on my coworkers and my peers have been quite a bit, and I don't think any of us can really afford to take time away from that. I mean, as far as the vaccine goes, this is the way to kind of step forward with it. Confidence is kind of shook in society in general with how responses have been to, you know, social distancing and, you know, properly, you know, addressing the situation at hand. So, but I mean, this is the way to move forward.
Mike Groom is an emergency room RN in Kenosha. You can hear more testimonials from Wisconsinites who've received the vaccine at WUWM.com, which is also where you can find all of our coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic. If you're curious about how getting the vaccine may impact your life, or if you want to get a test and don't know how, that's all at WUWM.com. Many businesses have been struggling through the pandemic, but there are some that have actually seen things improve. One of those is the biking industry. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll hear from a local bike shop about how demand for bikes has impacted his business for the better. But first, we'll hear from local voters about the state of politics following the insurrection and inauguration. That's coming up on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. People in Wisconsin and around the country have had their eyes on the nation's capital all this month. It started with an insurrection, which led to former President Trump's second impeachment. Then the nation watched as the inauguration heralded the beginning of a new presidency. WUWM's Mayon Silver spoke to several local voters with different political ideologies about the recent turmoil in American politics.
Hi, my name is Van Mobley. I am the president of the Village of Thienesville, and I voted for Trump in 2020.
And so, you know, we just had the inauguration. There's a change in leadership from the presidency, from Donald Trump to Joe Biden. What are you feeling about that change in leadership?
Well, I voted for Trump and I preferred Trump, but Biden is the president. And so I wish him the best and all the best. There are a number of areas that I always vote on that determine my vote, foreign policy and the economy primarily. And I certainly hope that Biden will follow some of Trump's lines on some of the foreign policy. For example, Trump's foreign policy featured extraction from the Middle East and putting Iran in a box. Now, I think that that's a very good policy. And Biden, although he ran against it, he still has wiggle room. He could more or less resume that policy, and I think it would be good. I also think that Trump put us in a good shape with the China relationship. That is, we can no longer really become subordinate to them on an economic level. And the Trump tariffs are a very good way to sort of keep a little space. On the internal economy, we featured a manufacturing renaissance. I think that's important. Energy independence is important. And then rising wages for the lower and middle classes. So those were very good trends emerging in Trump because of his policies. Yeah, on the COVID, you know, I think that my own view is that we have overreacted simply because we haven't really calculated the risk reward with the policies that we've chosen with the COVID. There are serious downsides to the lockdowns as we've pursued them. And I don't know that the upsides were as great as people imagine. Now we're left dealing with the downsides. I certainly hope that the vaccine puts us on the way towards sort of moving forward because we can't really and don't want to remain locked down. I am not opposed to further stimulus. And I think a bipartisan deal between Republicans and Democrats in the House and Senate on some further COVID action. I know that President Biden is calling for that, and I would be willing to go along with that. I like to see some of the details. So I think there's an opportunity for some bipartisan support in that area.
And so your take, just a snapshot, nutshell take of the impeachment and the riot. Well, what about the riot that happened at the Capitol?
I condemn the violence. So, I don't think that the riot was a good idea. I don't believe that Trump's speech incited it. You know, we had a lot of riots that were violent, and it was generated by people on the left and the right. And we really we need to figure out what's going on there and do a better job of preventing it. At the Capitol, I would say that we had some massive security failures.
And Trump didn't cross the line in what he was riling everyone up with for the few weeks ahead of counting the Electoral College.
No.
Okay. And really quickly, in that no answer, why would you describe that he's not responsible?
I think politicians who call for people to fight and work hard and protest. That's what the people do in the United States. And that's fine. The question is violence. I don't think that the people who went down there to the riot, I don't think that they were terrorists, Mayan. If they were terrorists, they would not have given it up so easily.
My name is Dennis Walton. And as far as my political affiliation at this time, I am a independent. And then as it pertains to my vote for 2020, I didn't go either way. I wasn't confident in either of the votes. So I did not vote Republican or Democrat.
What was the reason you felt like you couldn't choose either candidate?
It was so much bickering between the parties and the identity politics, and it was almost like choosing what gang are you in. You know, I really saw a lack of respect for each institution, whether it be Republican or Democrat. You know, Democrats had zero respect for Republicans. Republicans had zero respect for Democrats. And I just think that as a mature adult today, in today's world, you get tired of seeing individuals who claim that they're fighting for the freedom and the democracy of a country fighting in a manner where you're not welcoming democracy and you're not welcoming the values of others, no matter what side of the aisle that they fall on.
All that having been said, the fact that it was a contentious 2020, the fact that the country is going through so much and that the parties maybe didn't speak to you, we still just had a change in leadership in the presidency of Donald Trump to Joe Biden. How do you feel about that change in leadership in a nutshell?
Well, because I want to stay hopeful and optimistic, I'm going to, you know, just stay in prayer and give the Biden party the benefit of the doubt that they'll do the right thing. I think that the way that the transition of power took place was sad. And I think it really embarrassed America. But I think it also revealed, you know, some of the core issues that we're still dealing with in our country today.
When you say do the right thing from the Biden administration, what are the issues that are most important to you?
Well, the things that are most important to me are the reconciliation and the healing of family, and in particular, the Black family. You know, when I look at my community, that is like the number one reason why we're divided. So that's really important that we get fathers back into the homes. That we also create an equality amongst all people to where people are not feeling disenfranchised from the system. And then we really, you know, just heal the mindset of being divided, you know. So I don't like to see the country divided as far as party lines. I like to see a real process of democracy and people working as a whole.
And what would you like the federal government to do to help you and others in Wisconsin?
There are so many things that we need. I think we need to look very closely at, you know, the criminal justice system. There's a serious imbalance, you know, as far as people of color being incarcerated. We need to look at the laws that are affecting, you know, communities that have people unfairly and unjustly being incarcerated and bring balance to that system. And we need to you know, actually look at people who are incarcerated and the time that they have on the books, and we need to bring forth expungement laws. We need to create more pardons. So I think looking at the criminal justice system is something that's really, really important. They've been talking about reparations for a very long time, and I think that the federal government really needs to look at reparations and see, you know, how it's benefited other cultures and other races that they've given reparations to, and really examine, is it the right thing to do for the African American community?
And then we just sort of touched upon it, but if you wanted to add a little bit about, you know, what happened at the Capitol, the riot that resulted in President Trump being impeached for a second time, what's your reaction to that, and what do you want to come out of that?
With the impeachment, I think we have to be practical about, is that something that's going to be accomplished? Is it something that's going to continue to further divide the country, or is it going to give us the opportunity to heal and bring closure to a presidency that we want to get beyond and get past right now?
My name is Othman Atta. I'm actually the director of the Islamic Society of Milwaukee. Generally, I've voted Democratic for many years. There were one or two elections that I did actually vote Republican. I was very dissatisfied. I kind of consider myself pretty independent-minded. And this time, I definitely voted for Biden. And in fact, I encourage many people to vote for him because I wasn't satisfied with the direction of our country.
And what are you hoping for most with this new administration?
You know, I think there's a lot of changes that are needed, especially to reverse many of the things that the Trump administration tried to do. The Muslim ban, limiting immigrants from coming here or visiting here, DACA, you know, stopping the entry of refugees as part of established programs of the United States that have been in existence for decades. I mean, we're a country that has actually always welcomed people suffering from war and other you know, issues. So I think we would go back to that. I think that just a return to science, especially for the pandemic. I think that the Biden administration has to, though, definitely increase the number of vaccines that are being given. I really think the timeline needs to be shortened so we can get most of our country immunized in a much shorter period of time so we could get the economy back on track. I think we need to work again with the world, with multilateral organizations such as WHO, UN. I think that we also have to work with the rest of the world in terms of issues related to climate. And I think there's a lot of foreign policy issues where we have to stop coddling these dictators that the Trump administration was trying to coddle and really move to prioritize again human rights and the rights and freedoms of people around the world.
And specifically, let's look a little bit locally. What would you like the federal government to accomplish for people in Wisconsin?
Well, I think many of these things will impact Wisconsin. For example, the issue of the vaccines. And I think that there's issues with regards to racism. I mean, living here in Milwaukee, I think that's something that's very evident. The institutional racism has to be addressed. Of course, I'm also concerned about living wages for individuals. I think that upping the minimum wage, especially, you know, you have workers who are providing for families. But I do believe that healthcare is a human right, especially here in an advanced country such as the United States. I think it's a scandal that people don't have basic health insurance, all people. So I you know, all of these, I think, have a local component and a national component.
And of course, the beginning of the year, there was a riot at the Capitol, an insurrection, which resulted in President Trump being impeached a second time. And then, of course, there will be more trials in the Senate. What is your reaction to that? And what do you want to come out of that?
You know, I've been for now a number of years, actually from before Trump was elected, I took a very strong opposition, public opposition to his election because of the type of personality and the type of things that he was saying. And I think that the result of what he was doing and some of his staunchest supporters, that truly led to the insurrection. It's kind of like where Muslims were told, hey, you guys got to condemn groups such as ISIS because you're allowing them to do what they're doing if you don't condemn them. Well, you know what? Now we're expecting people to condemn people like Trump, Cruz and all of these others who were really inciting people to do the kind of things they did. Again, I'm not saying this is true of all Trump supporters, but I think that we need to be clear that there is a segment of them that have taken this extreme position. They're waving the flag, acting like they're a bunch of patriots, and yet they defiled one of the most important buildings that represents our country and our institutions.
Van Mobley is the Thiensville Village President. Dennis Walton is the Outreach Coordinator at the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative. And Othman Atta is the Director of the Islamic Society of Milwaukee. They all spoke to WUWM's Mayan Silver about the political climate of 2021 and their hopes for the new administration. If you missed any of today's conversations, you could find all of our content as a podcast. Search for Lake Effect in Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or really wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to hear our favorite interviews, look for Lake Effect Spotlight. Coming up in our Fit for You series, we hear from a local bike shop owner about how the pandemic has impacted their business.
We ordered so much that it would have been pretty catastrophic if we were wrong. And it was more order first and figure out where we're going to even store stuff second.
That's next on Lake Effect, here on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. The pandemic has disrupted a lot of industries, but cycling is one of the few that saw a boom. People have turned to bikes as an alternative to public transportation, a way to stay healthy, active, and relieve stress. Now there's a national and international bike shortage, with little end in sight due to supply chain disruptions and high demand. This can present few options for people hoping to buy one, but it's also a challenge and opportunity for bike shops. Emory's Cycling Triathlon and Fitness has been a family business since 1963, with two locations in the Milwaukee area. Co-owner Brent Emory was one of the few in the industry who saw the need for more bikes early on and took a risk to meet the challenge. Emory joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski for this month's Fit for You to talk about what he says has been a wild ride for the shop.
So when you were dealing with how to change your operations a little bit, did you ever fear that business would decrease significantly?
My feeling was that we were in for an explosion of biking interest. And the reason that I say that is I literally don't care if we had a world war, literally, or if we had hackers take down the entire energy grid, or if there was a worldwide oil crisis, nobody could drive cars, or this pandemic. Anytime there's really troubled times in any country around the world, bicycles become absolutely essential. And when you start taking a look at something that affects the entire world, my gut feeling was that people are going to need bicycles, not just want bicycles. And at the time that I really had that idea in my soul, it was like, oh, I called our other store. I was like, we have to start ordering everything. Initially, we were starting with the kids' bikes because it was like with people being cooped up, you got to get the kids outside. And then it was like, oh, we just have to start ordering anything and everything in just unprecedented numbers. And we beat the rest of the industry in a substantial way. And consequently, we had inventory flow for the entire year. Our Trek is our biggest brand, and our Trek factory rep said just unequivocally we were the best stock shop in this part of the United States this year.
So how much supply and stock did you get right as you initially had that gut feeling? Because I imagine many business owners probably had the opposite thoughts going through their minds and didn't want to stock up or didn't know what to do.
Yeah, it was something we ordered so much that it would have been pretty catastrophic if we were wrong. And it was more order first and figure out where we're going to even store stuff second. And during the high point of the season, we were selling bikes 3, 5, 8, 10 bikes a day out of state, not just to our client base locally here. It caught most dealers everywhere so off guard. There was an absence of product available. And if you walked into the average bike shop, it was literally like walking into the end of a going out of business sale. It looked like they just didn't have things to sell. And we were fortunate we had product all year long.
What's the farthest a customer has traveled to get a bike from you?
Well, as far as actually driving, I think we've had people drive 400 or 500 miles to get a bike. And then as far as shipping them to, you know, all corners of the U.S. And in the case of bicycles, we have to actually ship them to another Trek dealer. We can't ship them direct to the consumer because of the way the factory wants a bike professionally assembled. And so we'd ship it to their closest dealer, and then they would pay the closest dealer to put it together for them.
So you mentioned truck dealerships trying to get as much stock as you can. Had the pandemic's impact at that point on the global supply chain impacted your business heavily, or are you seeing that more now in the thick of it versus when you first decided to stock up heavily in the beginning?
Yeah, when we decided to stock up heavily, there was some product to be had, and then some of the product would have been a month or 2 months or 4 months out. Right now, any fresh bicycles that we're ordering today, most of them are 9 to 18 months out by the time they'll actually hit our door.
Wow.
And it's for any dealer. That's just the supply chain is that far backed up. They are predicting severe shortages in our industry through the middle of 2022 at a bare minimum, and it looks likely that it's going to be into 2023. We're already ordering bikes today that are going to be slated to come into our store in August of 2022. So it's just getting that far out.
That's kind of mind-boggling to hear as a consumer. What bike parts are most commonly supplied from, you know, either outside of the U.S. or the things that are making such a delay?
Yeah, there's a multitude of different things. First of all, worldwide demand is off the charts. It's just going through the roof with extra millions of people coming into bicycling. And again, for the reasons I stated earlier, it's not just the sport end, it's not just the racing end, it's not just a commuting end, it's not just the getting out of the house end. It's just everything combined, and bicycling has really hit its stride. Another thing that's in the short term that's going to cause an issue, and it looks likely to be for quite a while, worldwide shipping has been impacted in a profound way. There's not enough shipping containers, there's not enough ships, and so consequently that is adding into it. And at the very beginning of the pandemic, when we were ordering absurd amounts of things, all the big bicycle companies were panicking and cutting their projections, cutting their inventory production. And we went so far in the other direction that one of my factory reps, she's like, "Are you crazy?" And I was like, "Yeah."
So in addition to standard safety protocols when it comes to shop capacity, cleanliness, one thing you guys have to worry about especially is fitting people for bikes. So how did you adjust fitting people for bikes in a coronavirus world?
Well, we rearranged the store so we had as much open space as possible. And we had X's all over the floor for keeping people away from each other. And we had a line of people going down the block and almost daily. It was because we were inside the store, it's difficult to really see, you know, that line as often as it was, but it was our customers who were saying that, yeah, it's just every time I drove by, sometimes people just like, I couldn't stop right now because you had so many people out the door. I knew I'd have to wait too much. And but with the metering people in, we would put people on a bike for their fit. We'd step back, you know, 6 to 10 feet, and I prefer 10 feet. I don't like the 6 foot stuff. And have them take a look and see what we got to do. Okay, well, let's have you hop off the bike, then I'll do the adjustments, have you hop back on. One of the things that I do have a nice feeling now this many months into it is that because of the fact that our customer base is active people, I think it's not that our risk is less, but I really think our risk is a little bit less with the type of people we have coming in day in and day out. So we are still being extraordinarily cautious. And it's still kind of a struggle a little bit every single day, reminding a customer to take a few extra feet away from us and our crew, or even our crew to the customer, or even the crew to each other. There's a lot of fatigue that way, and people are just getting a little bit loose, and it's just like, no, you've got to stay on top of this for having us all stay healthy.
Right. And how has running a busy shop been with your team? Have you been able to get more help, you know, in the reverse of what many businesses have had to do? Have you needed more people to help you assemble such a high demand for bikes?
Yeah, we're hiring continually, and it's something that we're a little bit fussy about who works for us, because, again, it's a technical environment. It's a high pace environment. Not everybody is cut out for that. We also had some of our older crew that we had hired on in that even the months and year before the pandemic hit, that we were really looking for some of our retired people that were coming to work for us. And they just said, yeah, just with the risk, they just can't do it. And so we were shorthanded. We cut our store hours as a result, closed an extra day a week as a result. And so I don't know how we did it. It was extraordinary what we pulled off and our crew pulled off.
So you mentioned in your initial stock up, how much stock did you get at that point, and where are you at with it now?
It was more a continual flow, because we had things that we would order, and then we would know a date when they come in. We created a spreadsheet that shows exactly which bikes and which colors, which sizes are coming in on which week. And so we've got still a couple thousand bikes on order, and some weeks we'll have 50 bikes come in, some weeks we'll have 200 bikes come in. And so it really varies according to what's coming off the production lines. And at this point, we're literally putting bikes in every cubic foot we can put anywhere you can imagine. And I always joke with some of my customers and the factory officers, like, okay, you got some extra room in your basement? I need to store bikes.
All right, you guys are building them at home, right? Not even room in your shop to do it.
Yeah, we're building bikes at home on a regular basis, just because, again, every minute is valuable. I've got some of our people that used to work for us full-time that now have their other careers, and they're building bikes at their homes, pick them up, drop off another fresh batch. So it's something that's extra income for them, and it's a great help for us. So, again, it really is a logistical exercise more than just the fact that it's bicycles.
Was there any other point in time in your family's business history that you remember demand being like this, and do you think there ever will come a time again?
The oil crisis in 1973, there was a bike boom that was unprecedented at that time. So this is very similar, but I think longer lasting. That one, the supply chain was able to respond and ramp up within a year. But the shortages that we're seeing right now, the worldwide demand, and for the reasons that bicycling is that accessible to people, and I think this is going to stay around a long time. In other words, as far as just with more people being on bicycles, discovering the value of time with friends, time with family, getting out, actually breathing. You know, there's a neat saying of getting out of your cage, because a lot of people go from their house cage to their car cage to their work cage to their car cage to their house cage. They never get out of their cage. And bicycling gets you outside, and you can go anywhere you want with it. There's so many different ways you can ride a bike.
So amidst such a high demand, needing to lessen hours, work with a few less people,
and get more done.
And get more done, right. Yeah, the seemingly impossible task. And I know you've been a lifelong athlete and certainly rise to challenges, but what's the main takeaway or lesson of this time in your business that you'll always remember?
Eat well, sleep well, drink well, take care of yourself, take care of your relationships. And I really have such a great value, even more than we've ever had, for the people that work with us. And again, it's almost apologetic to see what we've put them through this last year. The unbelievable amount of work, the pace, the stress of it. And again, we couldn't have done it without them. And I'm just so ever thankful for every person that's worked with us.
Well, Brent, I want to thank you for sharing a bit of what you've been going through during this unprecedented time.
Yeah, it's going to continue to be a wild ride. And again, so long as we take care of ourselves and maintain our health, that's number one.
Brent Emery is the co-owner of Emery Cycling Triathlon and Fitness in Milwaukee. He spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski as part of our Fit for You series. You can explore all of our past Fit for You interviews at WUWM.com, including tips on how to boost your immune system during this cold and flu season that's taking place during the pandemic, and a conversation with a woman who biked across America after beating cancer. Those and many more conversations can be found at WUWM.com. And that wraps up today's Lake Effect. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm Joy Powers. If you missed any of today's conversations, or if you ever miss an episode of Lake Effect, you can find all of our content as a podcast. Search for Lake Effect in Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll hear from Angela Lang, the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. We learn what the group has planned for 2021 and how they'll continue to mobilize even after the election cycle has ended. Plus, what to do if you've got spider mites on your plants at home. That's all tomorrow at 10 on Lake Effect, here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.